closing time. Open all the doors and let you out into the world. Closing time. Turn all of the lights on over every boy and every girl. Closing time. One last call for alcohol, so finish your whiskey or beer. Closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. I know who I want to take me home. I know who I want.
Closing time. Semisonic, the band, and our guest this afternoon, the band's drummer, Jacob Slichter. What's it really like? Well, if you want to take a good look at what it's really like, you can look for Jacob's book, So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star. It's a funny, irreverent look at the world of rock and roll. And the subtitle is pretty telling. Here's the subtitle: How I Machine-Gunned a Room Full of Record Executives and Other True Tales from a Drummer's Life. Jacob Slichter will be back in his hometown this week for a book signing at Pages for All Ages Bookstore in Savoy. You can meet the author this Thursday evening at Pages, beginning at 7:30. Jacob, thank you so much for joining us this
afternoon.
Thank
you, Celeste.
So, how tough is it? I machine-gunned a room full of record executives?
that incident, I don't know how much I want to give away from that, other than that there was blood was spilled on that day. And it wasn't pretty.
Yeah. Well, I think it tells us right away it's not easy. This business is not easy.
No, it's not. I mean, there's a, you know, I think that I wrote the book because the real thing, you know, versus my expectations, the real going through the music business and being in a band was both worse than the darkest fears and way better than my sort of brightest hopes.
Yeah.
And the business part of it, I think, was, you know, the negative part of it revolved more around business things like record contracts and payola and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Great fun, great joy, but also a lot of absurdity.
Yeah. I mean, everything from the way that, you know, finding out things about how songs get on the radio, for instance. I had no idea before I got into the band that it takes hundreds of thousands of dollars to get a song on commercial radio. I thought all of that was illegal and sort of outmoded, but it's actually very legal and very much with us, alas.
Yeah.
So, you know, things like that or record contracts. And then just things I had never expected. For instance, when we went on a nationwide tour of amphitheaters opening for Matchbox 20, sitting around all day on the tour bus watching television reruns and kind of killing time and kind of being bored out of my mind until it came time to take the stage. And then at that point, you have this incredible sort of 75 minutes or however, I guess back then it was 45 minutes of just like incredible energy and fun and this sort of really great communion with the audience.
Mm.
You know, and you average that out and you still, I still look back and think, boy, if I had to do it all over again, I definitely would. But I think I might be a little more prepared for what it all involves.
Yeah. There's a lot of waiting.
Yeah.
A lot of waiting.
There's a lot of hurry up and wait.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of a disappointment for people like me who had, you know, dreamed of what the life of being in a rock band would be like. But then when you really think about it, I mean, how bad is waiting compared to, like, hauling dishes around a restaurant in a tub or, you know, working in a coal mine or, you know, there's lots of jobs that involve many worse things than waiting. So, you know, I think it's important to put it all into perspective.
Yeah. Well, at the outset of So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star, you're out of school, you're out of college, graduated from Harvard, and you've got a succession of day jobs, and you're making music at night in the basement, so to speak. How was it that you found yourself part of the band that would become Semisonic?
Yeah, I lived in Minneapolis at the time, and I had a couple of friends who were in a very successful band called Trip Shakespeare. And we got together one night because a friend of ours was graduating from college and wanted us to play a party. So we just sort of put together, you know, our own little pickup band and learned some songs, some old cover songs in the afternoon and played that night. Then we started to record in my basement because we had had such a good time playing at the party. And Dan, one of the two guys who, you know, was up on stage with me that night, said, "Hey, I've got some new songs. Let's record those." And I had some songs, and John, the bass player, had some songs. And then their band broke up. And so this little side project in my basement suddenly became the main focus for all of us. And, you know, at the age of 33 or however old I was, I finally sort of got my big break.
Mm-hmm. How did Closing Time come together? And maybe you would tell us about what it was like that hearing a rock station in Los Angeles was going to put it into rotation.
Yeah, we handed in, Closing Time was on our second record, and our first record was kind of a critically acclaimed commercial disaster, and we handed in the music for our second album, and the record company said to us that we don't think there are any hits on here. This is nice music, but there are no hits. And they wanted us to go back into the studio and record more, but suddenly the person who ran their radio promotion department, Nancy Levin, stormed into her boss's office and said, "You're crazy. This song, Closing Time, is a smash hit. I'm going to get it played." And she drove it across town. The MCA offices are in Los Angeles. She drove it across town to K-Rock, which is the sort of superpower of rock radio stations, and it's based in Los Angeles. And she played the song for the program director at K-Rock, and they started playing it that very afternoon. And pretty soon my phone started ringing nonstop with all kinds of people around the country telling me that they were hearing our song.
Mm. Is that when you started to ask, am I famous?
I kind of never, you know, I had like a brief time of wondering whether or not I was famous when we toured around Europe. I think I just never really got stopped on the street and asked for my autograph enough times for me to really seriously consider the idea that I was famous. I knew that the band was kind of famous. The song was certainly famous. And there were a number of times when I would be with my bandmate Dan, who was sort of the front man for the band, and, you know, like at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, some teenage girls, we were standing right next to each other, and some teenage girls ran up to Dan and asked him if he was in Semisonic, and he said yes, and they asked for his autograph. And, you know, moments like that sort of helped remind me that the band had a long way to go before the drummer would also be famous.
Mm. But drummers are so cool. Right?
Well, I think they're kind of cool because they get the least amount of attention. They're kind of like the goalie. Hmm. I think people kind of think the goalie at a hockey game or a soccer game is kind of cool because they kind of have this sort of underdog position sort of in the back of everybody else. But I don't think the drummers are the best known. You know, certainly I don't pay attention mostly to the drummer. When I see a new band, I listen to the singer.
I kind of take in the whole thing, but that's just me. So when you're approached for an autograph the first few times, how do you respond to that? What did you write on the paper?
I had like writer's block. I had autograph signer's block. You know, at first couple of times I just signed my name. Then I would see that Dan and John, my more experienced bandmates, they had already been on a major label, A&M Records, with their prior band. So I started reading their autographs, and they would say, you know, cool things, and I would try and say cool things, except I would sort of pause halfway through and wonder if I was misspelling a word or wondering if I had actually taken the autograph in kind of a dorky direction or maybe, in fact, misspelled the name of the person for whom I was signing the autograph. Like, you know, there's a lot of people who named Kim who spell it with a Y, and, you know, Christy with an I at the end, or, you know, you wouldn't believe how many Jennifer with a G, you know, all that kind of stuff.
It's Christy with an I with a heart over the I.
Right? Yeah, well, I think I may have actually put that heart there a few times. So it was fun, and it was also, you know, I couldn't help thinking I was doing it wrong.
Hmm. Yeah, well, it's got to be a really surreal kind of experience. I mean, you know, when you're getting ready for your first network television appearance on Conan O'Brien, you know, and you're in makeup, what a strange world, huh?
Yeah, that's really weird because, you know, you're about to play this song that you've played hundreds of times, and yet you're really scared of screwing it up, and you're looking at the clock on the wall and counting down the seconds till you go on. And it's only by focusing as much as you can on just the very most rudimentary tasks of what you've got to do that you can get through moments like that.
Hmm. Well, now, do you think you'll write another book?
I think I will, although I haven't yet decided what that would be.
Yeah. Well, you're a very good storyteller.
Well, thank you.
And a good writer. Jacob, thank you so much. I wish we had more time. Thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you, Celeste.
Jacob Slichter has been our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. He's the author of So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star, How I Machine Gunned a Room Full of Record Executives and Other True Tales from a Drummer's Life. The book is published by Broadway. And Jacob Slichter, who grew up in Champaign, will be back in his hometown this week for a book signing at Pages for All Ages Bookstore in Savoy. You can meet the author this Thursday evening at Pages, beginning at 7:30.